Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into another episode of the Stat Sheet Podcast. I am Simon Short, joined by Ronan Summers. No Ben Parker in the building for us this week. He is en route to the Super Bowl. I think he's in Vegas right now. He was going to come on the show, but he said he was going to hit the tables for like an hour. That was 2 days ago. We haven't heard from him, so we don't know what's up with Ben. So everybody, keep Ben in your thoughts. But until then, Ronan, how we doing, man? Happy Super Bowl week.
I'm good. Not as well as Ben, but I'm good. And happy Super Bowl week to you, Simon. Obviously, it's a bittersweet week, right? As we kind of wrap our heads around an entire off season of no football, because this weekend was weird. I mean, the Pro Bowl. I think it happened.
Something happened.
as much as, because I like to consider myself a dedicated football fan. But whenever it comes to the Pro Bowl now, I understand, don't want to get the guys hurt. I completely understand the whole mantra behind it and, not wanting to play a game where it is two-hand touch and nobody is really trying. So I understand the little mini games and stuff, and it makes for good content. So I think they're doing good on that front, but just not that enticing, not something that you want to tune into and watch all day long, because it just kind of gets strung out, Simon.
And it starts so early in the week now. Like, they started some of that stuff on Thursday, and it's funny because I've been thinking about this for a couple of years, and I'm like, okay, hey, how do you fix the Pro Bowl? Because, we're never going to get back in pads and run around and hit people. And I actually think flag is way more interesting than two-hand touch. Like, I am kind of into that. I didn't watch it or anything, but I was thinking about what I loved all the skill challenges they had when we were kids, and they have a lot of that stuff now. And for some reason, I'm just not into it now. And then you look and you're like, is that Baker Mayfield? Who else was out there? The AFC had some weird, Gardner Minshew was there. Like, what's Gardner Minshew do? And I think that's why. I think it's, why is Josh Allen not there? Josh Allen is playing golf with Tom Brady right now. Who's a big wig in the NFC that didn't make it? I mean, I'm not missing Jared Goff or anything. Dak is on some trip wearing a cowboy hat, right? And he's skiing or something. Like, where are just the players that we care about watching, right? Last year we had Tyler Huntley at the Pro Bowl. Like, I think that's part of the issue. I think also part of it, I'm going to sound really old here, I think moving it indoors for a lot of that stuff also loses the appeal. Like, when it was all in Hawaii every year, and like, you had the like scenery and the guys were wearing the Lays, and like, it just felt like such a vibe out there. And now it feels like Madden My Player, right? Where it's like all tricked out and technocolor. I don't know, man. There's an aesthetic part of it that I'm not feeling, but I saw a couple CJ Stroud highlights and they look good. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
You'll take that. You'll take that. I'm with you. You want to see, it's the Pro Bowl. You want to see the All-Stars. You don't see any other All-Star game, showing up with kind of like the second tier guys. So, you'd like to see the NFL kind of step it up in that front.
All right, that's our Pro Bowl coverage, brought to you by Stat Sheet Podcast. You're welcome, everybody. We are moving on from that. Ron and I have a good amount of stuff to get into this week. We're going to hit some news. We have the last two head coaching hires to cover. We're going to do a pseudo Super Bowl preview. We obviously have to see how the week goes with some of these injuries. Luckily, the teams aren't too banged up, but we'll hit the injury report and a few keys to the game that we have here a week out. Or 6 days out, I should say. And then we'll get into our annual Stat Sheet Podcast Award Show. We'll go over the official ballots that came out, and just give brief reactions to them, and maybe order the guys 1 to 5. If you want to deep dive into how Ronan and I felt about the end of season awards, go over to the Simon Short podcast from just last week. Ronan and I did a full thing on the main 5 or 6 awards there, and went through a bunch of names and came up with ballots. So in-depth ballot and award talk over there. But at the end of the show here, Ronan and I are going to hand out our own awards for the season. So some guys we just don't want, some guys, some teams, some moments we don't want to forget from the 2023-24 NFL season. So all that is coming at you right now. Let's start off with our news of the week. Ronan, Mike McDonald was hired as the Seahawks head coach like 2 days after the Ravens got eliminated from the playoffs. How'd you feel about that hire?
Simon, I didn't hate it. There were obviously the pool of head coaching candidates that I was kind of very excited about that didn't really get picked from, whether that be Pete Carroll, whether that be Vrabel, whether that be Belichick. None of them really got picked. And I'm sure there's a reason behind it, right? Because nobody went for him. It seemed almost like this head coaching cycle was a little bit rushed. I know we're sitting here in early February, but I don't know. It seemed a little bit rushed. But McDonald does not necessarily seem like a rushed decision. He was one of the hotter names in this cycle right before it all started. Obviously, I almost said Miami. Baltimore's success has been, profound, right? On defense, granted, they have a lot of talent on that defense. The pair of linebackers are pretty hard to match up with, so I'm excited to see what direction McDonald takes the Seahawks in, because that is a young team that kind of could use a new, fun direction. And I think that is honestly one of the better matches, between head coach and team and roster. This cycle, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love this hire. This was my match that I made before really any hire started, except for the Gerard Mayo promotion. I wanted to see McDonald here specifically, as you mentioned, for the defense. As a defensive mind, he can come in and take a defense that's already filled with talent, and it's got all sorts of different talent too, right? It's not like all Pro Bowlers or all guys on rookie deals or all veterans. There's some aging guys, there's some expensive guys you got to work around, there's young guys, there's talented players. And for a defense that feels like stuck, right, for the last few years, they've tried to add stuff, make splashy moves, and they haven't broken out of the bottom 10, bottom half of the league in defense for the last couple of years. Feels like he can come in, look at what this roster is, and say, don't even make any changes to the roster. I can come in and make a great defense with this right now. And then on the other side of the ball, I think why this team moved on from Pete Carroll, why Vrabel wasn't brought in, why Belichick wasn't brought in, is because the front office and ownership is thinking about going in a new direction at quarterback. You know, that was kind of the tone we got from Pete Carroll in his couple press conferences, right? And some reports out of Seattle. I think with McDonald being a defensive mind, depending on who they bring in at OC, because I don't think they've hired an offensive coordinator yet. You can kind of play out what happens with this offense in any direction. You can roll with it one more year, and just let McDonald spend year one focus on the defense, let the offense kind of continue to do its thing, and see how that goes for a year. But because McDonald is so young, I'm sure he was more on board with what those three older guys would have been on board with, and that is, hey, maybe we go in a new direction at quarterback this year or next year at the latest, right? And that's a guy that, because of his age, you can move forward with into the new quarterback regime as well. I'm really interested to see his staff. You know, other top defensive guys have been hired as DCs are promoted in Baltimore already, right? Their defensive back coach is in Tennessee now, as the defensive coordinator. Their longtime assistant head coach and D-line coach is now in Miami as the defensive coordinator. So, like, who's he going to bring over, right? He has Leslie Frazier as his assistant head coach. Jay Harbaugh is his special teams coordinator, so that's fun. But I'll be interested to see what he does with his coordinators there, for sure. But I think that'll be fun.
Yeah, no, the coordinator Offensive, defensive, that's make or break, right? Especially for a defensive minded guy, you got to bring in the right offensive mind into that situation because they had a good system going, right? It's not like it was broken in Seattle. So you want to bring in something that's relatively familiar, right? Maybe some components that they were using this year and years prior, try to transition over into this new regime with McDonald.
Doing a quick search online. Some people are talking about Eric Bieniemy. Apparently, Mike Kafka has been linked to them. So there's certainly a number of good offensive minds still out there. But because of his time at college, at the college ranks for just recently, too, that kind of opens his pool for, I think, where he could go as well. So it'll be interesting to see what he ends up doing on both sides of the ball at coordinator there. The final hire that got made, and this one is juicy. I think that we could dig into here. The Washington Commanders end up hiring Dan Quinn to be their head coach. Now, let me give you a bit of the backstory here because this is the interesting part to get into. The Commanders brass that I've been super high on since they got there, right? They're on their way to Detroit to interview Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator for the Lions, for a second time. And like we all know what that means, right? They're there to give Ben Johnson the papers and hope it all works out, and a courtesy interview to one Aaron Glenn, no disrespect. While on the plane, they get a text from Ben Johnson or Johnson's agent that he's staying in Detroit. So we'll come back to the Johnson staying in Detroit thing and how we feel about that move. But the Commanders then are like on the plane thinking about like what the heck are we gonna do? And I think like 24 hours later, Dan Quinn is their head coach. So, Dan Quinn to the Commanders, how do you feel about this?
Probably the same way that the Commanders feel about it. Just kind of, eh. I don't think it's a bad hire. I don't think he's going to be a bad head coach. I don't think he's necessarily going to be the guy to lead them into the promised land. I don't think he's going to be the. He might be the one to help kind of the transition of the new, I don't know, everything. For this Commanders team, right? Because they're trying to ditch everything in the past with all the controversy, whether it be at the stadium, with their likeness, I mean, you name it. So they're just trying to get in good graces. And the Dan Quinn hire, I think he's like one game above 500 as a head coach. It just doesn't necessarily seem like an upgrade over Ron Rivera. I know Rivera, right? He didn't even know that they were going to be or eligible for the playoffs at a certain point, right? So, I mean, there's that aspect of things, but I don't know. It doesn't necessarily seem like a leap forward. It seems like maybe a step forward, but the fact that we're kind of on the fence on that sort of things, I don't know. I don't know, Simon.
Yeah, this is tough. I mean, Ben Johnson was the guy that I linked to him all year or all this whole cycle. Seemed too perfect, too good to be true. Well, not too good to be true. It seemed like exactly what was going on because this staff, this ownership group, and now with the GM, felt like they were gonna make happen everything they wanted to make happen, right? And now we're getting all sorts of stories about like Ben Johnson was kind of turned off by all the basketball people and maybe thought they were like just coming in and pushing their weight around. They're trying to spin the story that like, oh, he wasn't interviewing that well, and oh, maybe he was going to cost too much money. And then they were like, wait, that makes us sound really poor and cheap. That wasn't going to be a problem. Bunch of spinning going on. So I'm surprised from a Washington perspective. I'm very surprised. I'm just as surprised as they are because yeah, I mean, they waited all this time. They're the last hire because they were trying to get Ben Johnson, and they're. You know, while on one hand, the earlier teams that made hires like the Titans and not so much the Raiders and Patriots because they had their guys in the building, but the Titans were the prime example of us being kind of underwhelmed. Like, could you have waited a few weeks? This is what happens when you wait a few weeks, right? Like, who were we looking at? And yeah, I'm with you on Dan Quinn. He's 5 years younger than Ron Rivera was when he got hired by Washington. But we're saying all the same things about Dan Quinn that we said about Ron Rivera, right? Good regular season defense, but has had some shaky playoff experiences with that defense. good leader, good communicator, well liked, well respected, players, coaches, media. Sure, it's a retread, but like we feel pretty good about it. A franchise stabilizer. We said all the same stuff about Rivera. But what was true about Rivera and what's true about Dan Quinn is they're good football coaches, right? So like you at least feel like, okay, this is going to totally blow up in our face. But part of this also was going to be what's their coordinator situation. And when Dan Quinn was in this cycle, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that Joe Witt Jr. was going to be his DC. He was with him in Atlanta, with him in Dallas. So no surprises there. And then they have the whole Cliff Kingsbury thing, who is now their offensive coordinator, who was the favorite to be their OC for a couple days. And then he was hired by, or reportedly hired by the Raiders. And then that fell through. So now he's back in DC. And it's just like, no matter what happens, things get wonky in Washington, man. And I don't know. It's tough. And I don't know how much to put that on Dan Quinn. I don't know if you should be like, oh, well, he turned me down, so I should just move on and go to another person. Or if it's weird that he took him back, or if it's not weird that he took him back, I don't know. But I'm with you. Like, it's pretty underwhelming. I don't think it's horrible. This isn't like they went out and got, and not to besmirch Bobby Slowick, but they get Bobby Slowick, and then he ends up being a Nate Hackett where he has no idea what he's doing, right? It's not going to be that good. It's going to be solid and respectable and professional and yada yada. But yeah, like I don't know if it's that ceiling raiser. I'm very interested to see Cliff Kingsbury just be an OC. He hasn't done that in the NFL before. He skipped that step. So I'm interested in it. I don't know if I'm excited for whichever team it was going to happen to. I know I didn't want it for the Steelers when his name was kicked around for Pittsburgh. But I'm interested to see it. So we'll see what happens. Maybe it means they're gonna be aggressive and try to go get Caleb Williams, right? Because of his relationship there at USC. I was talking to our pal Robertson Beyer of Odds on Favorite today. He's a Washington fan, and he reminded me Drake May did play in an air raid style system at UNC, so that would also be fine. That would also be a fit. But yeah, there's a lot going on. What do you think about the Ben Johnson side of this? If you had to make one guess as to why he stayed, and then how do you feel this affects him next year? And trying again to be a head coach.
I would say it came down to it being so late in the cycle. Right, they were in the NFC Championship. A lot of the top teams, a lot of the top landing spots had already claimed their head coach. I think that's kind of what got him because I think, man, had the Lions, let's say, missed the playoffs and he had gotten two full interviews with every team, I mean, he would have gone to Atlanta or LA or one of these spots, say Seattle, right? You would have thought, I thought that was a dark horse spot. I was, as a Rams, fan, I guess, that would have brought nightmares. Him coming to the NFC West, him and Shanahan duking it out, and then McVay in there every once in a while. But I don't know. I think it just came down to it being so late into the cycle, Simon.
And just like if he felt like his options were limited, right? Like maybe he looked up and he was like, I
Right.
have to choose like maybe he already knew through back channel Seattle was preferring McDonald. He was like, so it's either I take Washington or that's it, right? And maybe just the idea of having to be singled out. I can see that for sure. I am interested to see because this is the second year in a row he's decided to do that. And while on one hand it's like wow, the offense keeps getting better, right? When you go back, you've now turned down head coaching jobs essentially in two cycles. I don't know for sure which ones he got offered last year, but he was certainly in the mix for many of them before he pulled himself out. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the jobs are next year and if he's still as sought after. Or my whole thing with him this year has been, can you trust Jared Goff for 3 years in a row to play well? And then if he falls off, like, is your stock lower? We'll have to wait and see. We're not rushing to fire anybody into next year. We'll save that for other people, and we'll see what happens. One last thing on Washington. You mentioned the big three, right? Belichick, Vrabel, Carroll. I think the easy answer is that those guys weren't necessarily into a rookie quarterback. Now, Pete Carroll didn't interview anywhere. I feel like even though he didn't want to move on from Geno Smith, it wouldn't mean that he wouldn't be into a rookie quarterback elsewhere. I think that was more about him being pro Geno, not anti-rookie. But it does feel silly that Washington ends up with Dan Quinn and they didn't even talk to Vrabel, Belichick, Carroll. But again, maybe just because none of those guys wanted a rookie quarterback necessarily. Anything else on coaching stuff or newsy items for the NFL from the week?
Just the Kliff hire as an OC, right? Commanders have, I believe, the second overall pick, something to keep an eye on, right? Just came over from USC, just working with Caleb Williams. It seems like that's almost, they're almost showing their cards here and what they're trying to do, whether that's trade up to one, whether that's, hey, we think Chicago's going to keep it, we're going to be able to land them at two. I think, which, hey man, if you're Chicago, you're loving this because if you can trade down to two, get Marvin Harrison, and oh my God, you're riding the gravy train.
Well, it is full on speculation and misinformation season as well on the whole Twitterverse. So don't believe anything you read on Twitter for the next 2 months. Let's talk Super Bowl, Ronan. We don't do many previews here on the Statsheet podcast. This will only be our second preview we've done, I guess third if you include the regular season as a whole. But we're gonna talk injury news. And we're going to talk some keys to the game. So why don't you work us through what the latest deal on the injury report is for the two teams in the Super Bowl?
All right, so on the Chiefs side of things, obviously we have Joe Tooney, who missed last game. He's got a pec injury. His availability for the Super Bowl is kind of still up in the air. It's unfortunately looking like potentially more on the side of not playing, just because of the severity of the injury. He's not completely ruled out yet. He's a tough guy, right? It's the Super Bowl. So if there's a will, there's a way. It's not completely ruled out yet. Charles Omenihu, unfortunately, right, torn ACL. He's going to be out for the foreseeable future. Hopefully, we can see him back on the field maybe mid-season, mid to late season, come next year. But that's obviously a tough blow for that Chiefs pass rush. Karl Loftus, J Chris Jones, and company going to have to step up. Sky Moore and Jerick McKinnon are both eligible to come off of injured reserve. So that's huge for the Kansas City offense. They've been riddled with whether it be injuries or just bad luck in general on offense. So anytime you can get some playmakers, Jerick McKinnon, in particular, he's a veteran who's been there before, and he's definitely one of those guys that for whatever reason, Pacheco was fantastic, but Jerick McKinnon might have three rushes for 25 yards and four receptions for 60 and two touchdowns, right? So, and then Sky Moore is kind of that gadget player. So both of them coming off of IR potentially can be big for Kansas City. On the San Fran side of things, we've got George Kittle with, I believe, an ankle, or no, I'm sorry, a toe injury. He did not practice Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. Probably just precautionary. Just don't know. Don't need him out there. He knows the plays. He knows what to do. He's been here before. Just get healthy, George. And then Ambry Thomas, he got hurt during the game, I believe, during the NFC Championship. He's got an ankle injury. He was limited Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So his availability, he's considered day-to-day. So come Super Bowl time, right? We've got a couple of days before then. He should be good to go, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, so San Fran is obviously in way better shape than Kansas City at this point, but neither team, you know, Joe Tooney is going to be, I think, the biggest name to watch. You know, those guys you mentioned, yeah, Kittle and Ambry Thomas got banged up in that NFC Championship game, but both should be fine. Eric Armstead's on the injury report, but he's been on it since he came back from injury in the playoffs here. I think he played the first 12 games of the season and then missed the last five with knee and foot injuries, but he's been you know, they've been holding him, limiting him at practice so he could play in these games here in the postseason. So he should be out there. Tooney's the big one because, you know, if Sky or Jerick McKinnon can't come back, and I think Sky began practicing for the first time this week. I don't think McKinnon has started practicing yet, even though he's now eligible. Omenihu, rotational D end, but you said it like it's one game, right? It's time for Karlaftis and who balled out in the championship game. Mike Danna has had a nice season. If you can get Willie Gay back out there, he missed the AFC championship game. You have that linebacker rotation of Chennault and Tranquill and obviously Bolton and Gay. You can mix and match some things there. Joe Tooney's the X factor, you know. From Sharp Football Analysis, Nick Allegretti was the guy who started in Tooney's place. He allowed four pressures and one sack in that game. And he was the starter in the Chiefs Super Bowl game against Tampa Bay when Patrick Mahomes was running for his life. And he allowed seven pressures in that game, which is just insane. He's trying his best, but that man does not hold up the way Joe Tooney does. Tooney talked to Ian Rappaport today, I believe. Yeah, this was today, just this evening. Rappaport tweeted out, and he had talked to Tooney, and Tooney said he's dealing with a significant pec injury. He told me it's up in the he told Rappaport it's up in the air whether he can practice this week at all. He'll know a little bit later on. He's just taking it day by day, saying he's never quite been in this situation before because Tooney, I mean, before this injury, like hadn't missed a game in years. Like that man has just is an Iron Man. He's always played. So, pec injuries for offensive linemen. The fact that they haven't completely said he's totally out, like you wonder, like, is that like a partial tear kind of deal? And like he's gonna need surgery when the year ends anyways. I don't want to speculate or anything, but pec an offensive lineman is never good. So that's going to be huge. We know that the 49ers have a very talented defensive line. They're seventh in the league in sacks, I believe. I have that stat for later. But yeah, that's gonna that'll be the one to watch over the course of the week if Joe Tooney can play or not, for sure.
You hate to talk about the injuries before the game, right?
It's
It's
such
not
a bummer.
the ideal conversation, right? But you need to know who's banged up, who's not.
Gotta
But
know.
luckily, it doesn't seem like there's going to be too many misses. But it is nuts, you know, an offensive lineman with a pec injury. At some point, you kind of gotta factor in, you know, how injured is he, and is it going to become a deficit for our team too, right? Because San Fran pass rush is no joke. So, I mean, you got to come with your A game if you're going to be on the interior of the trenches, and that'd be a tough task for sure.
Absolutely. Ronan, let's get into our keys of the game here. I have a couple notes for both sides of the ball. 49ers offense versus Chiefs defense, Chiefs offense versus 49ers defense. I want you to let me know what you think about these keys and then give me anything else you're thinking about. My first key that I have for the 49ers offense versus the Chiefs defense is I'm looking for explosives. How explosive can this 49ers offense be? The Niners are first in passing plays that are 20 plus yards and tied for first in 30 plus yard passing plays this season. The Chiefs don't give up a lot of air yards on the other end of that with the defensive backfield that they have that they've put together over the years, but they are potentially probably on a third string safety in this game for the Super Bowl here, I think. Casey hasn't allowed a 300 yard passing game all year. The 49ers have six on this season, which is among the tops in the league. So looking at explosive plays, chunk plays downfield, how often Purdy can get that ball deep downfield to Ayuk or, you know, on a seam ball or some kind of crosser to George Kittle. That's the first thing I'm looking for. What do you think about the 49ers pass game on the Chiefs pass defense?
You know, Simon, before the season, I might not have been too optimistic, right? But I think we're now in a world where we have to respect what Brock Purdy brings to the table. He's got a little bit of pop to his game. He's able to make those chunk plays, right? And it's not reliant on, you know, hitting McCaffrey or Samuel in the flat and have them going 20 yards down the field. You know, it's a combination of, hey, I just chucked it 15 yards and he's going to run it 17 more. And it's just a beautiful offense. So I think that's a very key aspect of this game to watch. Snead does not mess around. So,
Oh, yeah.
whoever he's lined up across is probably going to have a relatively tough day if I had to take a shot in the dark. But that's whenever it opens up for the other three guys on that San Francisco offense, plus Juwan Jennings or something, to just kind of pop up and rear his head and say, "Hey, I'm here too." So with the cast that San Francisco has, I think it's entirely possible for them to succeed. And on the flip side, with the talent that Kansas City has in their secondary, I think that they could potentially shut that down. And with that pass rush, we just talked about the guys that need to step up. I think that that's entirely possible too.
Yeah, it'd be super interesting to see how they play it. I'm not gonna give anybody any numbers or anything like that, but I would say maybe we don't see it be as prolific, right? The 49ers pass offense, where it's like every other drive, they're pushing the ball deep downfield, but it's going to be those key moments, right? I expect this to be a tight game. Those key moments where it's 3rd and 2, and you're all geared up for McCaffrey, and then it's Ayuk for a 40-yarder, right? Where it's, man, the Chiefs just got back-to-back touchdowns. The 49ers need to make a play, and in 3 plays they get in field goal range, something like that. So maybe not a 300-yard passing game where it's prolific, for the 49ers throughout the game, but I think they're gonna have a few key moments where they're able to get the ball downfield, pretty quickly. I'm looking here. Yeah, I mean the Chiefs corners, I mean they've been rotating those young guys. McDuffie is obviously the slot all pro. Snead is the number one guy, but young guys Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams have been playing this year too. I like those guys. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Now, so that's the pass game for the 49ers offense versus Chiefs defense next. I'm also interested in the run game. Now this is like these feel pretty obvious, right? I'm like, hey, how do the 49ers pass the ball? How do the 49ers run the ball? But specifically, we talked coming out of the Chiefs Ravens AFC Championship game about why did the Ravens not try to run the ball down the Chiefs' throat, right? Kansas City is certainly at a disadvantage in this phase of the game. They're a bad run defense, and the 49ers are an excellent rushing offense. They don't get a ton of explosives on the ground, but they're second in the league in rushing DVOA, 3rd in total yards, and 4th in attempts. So they will pound the rock right now. Do they see something the way the Ravens offense saw something and say, we know we pound the rock, we know we're very good at it, but let's try to attack them through the air instead, right? Is there something about the Kansas City defense that scares off the Niners run game? I doubt it, especially having gotten to watch the Ravens game and be like, maybe that's not the way we should do this. The Niners haven't lost a game this year where they've run for over 140 yards. They're 11-0 in those games. They've done it, first of all, they've done it 11 times, right? And they've never lost when it's happened. And Kansas City has allowed that 15 times this season, including postseason play. So what's that, 20 games? 15 of 20? That's a lot. That's 75% of the time, if I'm doing my math correctly here, that Kansas City is allowing 140 yards on the ground. So whether you're looking at advanced metrics or raw numbers, Kansas City is certainly at a deficit in the run game. How do you think the run game is going to impact this one for the 49ers offense?
That's a very scary stat, Simon. I'm not loving that if I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. That I think that might decide the game. Heading into this, I think I was, hey, I think Kansas City, it's Mahomes, but golly, I mean, they run the ball so efficiently in Kansas City. You just said it, they can't stop the run, at least to a certain degree. So yeah, I think it's going to greatly impact this game, Simon, to a very boring answer. But that, how do you match up against that? How do you stop that, right? Going into this week, hey, guys, I know out of 15 out of 20 times, we let them run all over us, but it's the Super Bowl and it's the best rushing team in the league. We can't let them do that. Like, how do you. Is there even an explanation here? I know you're not a defensive coordinator, and if you knew the answer, you'd be able to, or you'd be, in the situation right now answering it, but.
I honestly can't explain it. They haven't moved Chris Jones on the defensive line quite as much as they did. What was that, 2 years ago, where they were straight up playing him as a defensive end, and that wasn't working. I think it's they don't have a lot of talent on the inside, and Chris and Jones certainly an all pro player, but in the last year of his contract, I do think he's taken some off the top when it comes to the run defense. I think he's biding his time for trying to get a clutch fourth quarter sack. And look, when you're almost 30 years old and played the snaps that he has, you do what you got to do here. But yeah, I don't have a good explanation for why their run defense hasn't been good this year, because they have good linebackers. Their edge, I will say, I didn't look at like their splits on outside runs versus between the tackles. But their defensive ends aren't the biggest, right? Mike Dana and Karloftis are their starting ends. When Omenihu was out there, he's bigger. But maybe that has something to do with it, right? If they are liable to kind of give up the edge a little bit, maybe they're getting beat to the outside. I haven't looked at that a ton. Maybe that's something I'll try to look into before the game and tweet it out. But yeah, they just don't have a lot of beef, like right there in the middle. And then your linebackers are kind of getting eaten up. I think you're at a bit of a disadvantage there. So we'll see. The Niners are great at scheming up the run game. We'll have to wait and see if they outthink themselves a little bit going into this one and kind of veer away from it. But let's flip this thing over, because this is not feeling very good for the Chiefs right now. So let's see if we can make ourselves feel better. Keys to the game: Chiefs offense versus 49ers defense. And it's also the run game, Ronan. I mean, maybe this is boring, but like, we've seen this year that the good running teams, we've talked about all year on this podcast, like, you've got to run the ball well here in 2023-24 to win. And the Chiefs have done that. They have over 100 rushing yards 9 times this season, and they're 7-2 in those games. The Niners have given up 100 yards 8 times this season, and they're 4-4. So the Niners have only lost 5 games all year. 4 of them have come when they've given up more than 100 yards on the ground. And that's not even like a really large marker, right? And when you're talking the raw stats, it gets a little skewed, because it's like, okay, if that team is winning, then they're trying to run the clock out, so they're running more anyways. But point being, if the Niners opposing team is effectively running the football, the 49ers are in a bad situation, right? So can the Chiefs do that? And the other end of it is helping their time of possession, right? If they can keep the ball and keep that 49ers explosive offense off the field, that's going to help them. Now, I know, talk about San Fran's run defense. I know they ranked in the top 5 in run defense by basic counting stats, right? Yards and attempts and touchdowns and things like that. But if you look at the advanced stuff, like success rate and DVOA, like they're average, and it wanes pretty easily. Like, just looking at it, it's pretty clear to tell that it's not going well. I do have an answer for why this is happening, though. They run, I every time I watch, I see almost no 5-man fronts, right? It's always the 4 defensive linemen that are down there at the line of scrimmage. And their linebackers feel like they play really far back off the line of scrimmage. I mean, there's off-ball linebackers, and then there's the 49ers, who are just off-ball. And like, that's partly by design, I'm sure, where it's, we're going to defend the pass first. And then Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw are two of the best linebackers at coming downhill. So we're just anticipating that they'll kind of make up the gap there. But the 49ers run defense specifically, I think, is very gettable. And the Chiefs beat the Ravens by using that ground game and running. When they weren't being very explosive, they were able to run the ball in the key moments when they needed to. I haven't looked at this number, but it feels like if they have a 3rd and short and they don't get too cute and just go to Isaiah Pacheco, like, he's going to get the yards they need more times than not. So running the ball for the Chiefs in this one is also going to be big. What do you think about the Chiefs running game trying to go against that 49ers defense?
All right, so I mean, now I'm a little bit more optimistic on the Chiefs side of things. Pacheco has obviously been a huge factor for this offense. I think without Tooney, that or Tony, however you pronounce it,
Tooney, you had it.
that would be interesting, right? This front four for San Francisco, right? Statistically, the run game hasn't necessarily been their strong suit, but I could definitely see them stepping up and having a good game here, right? Javon Hargrave. They signed him for a reason. I think it was this reason right here. A lot of guys are going to be stepping. That's the brightest of lights. I know I'm being really boring here with all of these. But I think Pacheco can honestly maybe get into a groove early. You hit it right on the head whenever you mentioned the time of possession preventing San Francisco from getting those chunk plays that you were just talking about, right? If the defense can't prevent it, then maybe your offense can. I think that's definitely one of the keys to the game, Simon.
Yeah, you're not gonna get like Pacheco isn't the type of running back that if you give him a head of steam, you're just gonna bring him down at the 4 yard line, right? If you don't get to him and make contact right away, you're going to have a hard time. I'm gonna look back real quick, and I'm doing this on the fly. The Lions, when they played the Niners, and I know we talked about it last week in terms of. And there were key moments that we wish they had run the ball more, right? They had 182 yards on the ground in that game. And we talked about like Jahmyr Gibbs didn't get a handoff for like the whole second half, basically, right? Because he had that fumble and then he didn't get another handoff. So David Montgomery had a game 15 rushes on for 93 yards on 15 rushes, and Gibbs had 45 on 12. So like those guys were able to get chunks, and it just became a situation where Lions felt like they had to go to the pass to keep up with it, but that run game was so positive for them. So I really feel like if you and especially if you get to mix in if Clyde or not Clyde, I mean if he could play for you, that would be nice. But if McKinnon could come in and do some things, but man, just feed Pacheco, because if he's gonna be able to get to any hole that he wants quickly, and then he's got a head of steam going against Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw, and you just pound that over and over again. I think that could be really effective, but here's the biggest one, I think, and in order to make all of that possible for the Chiefs offense, Mahomes staying upright, right? Sacks. Can the 49ers get to Mahomes? I think that is the biggest key in this game, because the Chiefs are at a disadvantage from an offensive explosiveness standpoint, right? Purdy and Mahomes are actually like neck and neck in sack percentage and sacks taken. But I think because the Chiefs are offensively at the disadvantage, it's even more important for them. The 49ers are seventh in sacks in the NFL. Kansas City is actually second. So, like, the 49ers do need to be on their P's and Q's for this. But for the Chiefs specifically, without, if Joe Tooney doesn't play, this is almost feeling like 2020 with the Bucs, right? Where it's not that the Chiefs are this giant, right? They've been underdogs all through the playoffs, but they're coming in and we have questions about their offensive line against what is a good pass rush. We know the tackle play has been inconsistent at best for the Chiefs this season. Now you're wondering if Joe Tooney's going to play. Trey Smith had a couple bad plays in a row in that AFC Championship game at right guard, even though he's largely a very, very good player. I think it's more important for the Niners to get to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, because if they can get them in a negative game script and force them to not run the ball, that's going to hurt the Chiefs more than it would if the Niners had to drop back more often, right? The Niners have to drop back. They've got the weapons downfield, Yak. They've got the schemes. They've got multiple guys to go to. They've got Christian McCaffrey. The Chiefs got three dudes that they can go to, right? They've got Kelce, they've got Pacheco, and they've got Rashee Rice. And Rashee Rice, you mostly want on, all those guys you mostly want on underneath stuff, and Pacheco just running the ball. So I think maybe even more from a 49ers perspective than a Kansas City perspective, right? The 49ers pass rush has really got to get home on Mahomes, because if they're in positive game script, or they're getting second and mediums, third and shorts over and over again, that's really going to put the 49ers on their back heels and force them to continue to have to play that run defense, which has been a problem for them. So what do you think about that, specifically that angle, right? The key for the 49ers defense is to try and get to Patrick Mahomes and bring him down, who, by the way, Mahomes is, I guess you could call it, second in the league in percentage of dropbacks that have led to a sack this year, right? The only guy better at avoiding sacks is Josh Allen. So Mahomes is slippery. He's a hard one to bring down.
Yeah, no, that was going to be my point, Simon, is not only do they have to get there, they have to bring him down, because he will extend plays. He will make plays with his feet. He'll throw a sidearm, he'll throw it left-handed, he'll shoot it like a basketball, he'll bounce it off his helmet. He'll do what it has to do to get to, whoever the targeted receiver is. So, you've got to make sure to wrap up. Yeah, no, obviously keeping him upright, from the Chiefs standpoint, we saw it in the Tampa Bay Super Bowl. It can be detrimental. So you, as cool as it was to see him throwing it as he was like flying to the side, you can't see that. You don't want to see that, if you're a Chiefs fan or playing for the Chiefs. Got to keep Mahomes upright, got to keep him relatively comfortable. It's one of the best defenses in the league, right? Maybe not against the run, but when, especially whenever healthy, man, you get two toe huffle longa huff
Well,
to
he's on IR anyway, so don't worry about
yeah,
him.
I know. Well, whenever he's healthy, just whenever that team's healthy, they're scary. But even right now, they're scary, because like the Ravens, that middle linebacker core, but. Anyway, back to the pass rush. Keep Mahomes upright. Bosa's going to be breathing down his neck. It's going to be a fun matchup, Simon.
I guess we should do the official score prediction, Ronan. This feels
Oh God.
blasphemous to do on a Monday night. It's Monday, February 5th, so we can pretty easily write this off to like we didn't have all the information. It was Monday, even though there's not like a ton of injuries that are up in the air here. But listen, it's a Super Bowl preview show. We're burying this right in the middle of the podcast, so I think we're pretty safe. Give me a prediction, man. Who wins? What's the score? What's the Gatorade color? I don't know. Whatever you want to do.
I'm gonna go 34-31 Chiefs.
Wow.
Taylor Swift is gonna get proposed to at the end of the game.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
The Gatorade, it's gonna be, I think it's gonna be like a like miscellaneous, like maybe, yeah, I think it's gonna be some water. I think they're gonna have some water, some good old
Oh, water.
H2O
It's a water year.
in
I
the
like that.
jugs.
Those
Yeah.
are.
You know what? Keep Andy not sticky. Right, he's gotten showered in the Gatorade enough. He doesn't just get him some. You can take a bath,
I
Andy.
feel
It's
like
all
that
right.
man's sticky already. Listen, I love the proposal. I will say this. I will be a sap. And if it happens, I will cry. And I'm here for it. So listen, Taylor is having a tremendous week. Just won her what 17th album of the year Grammy, which is insane. So yeah, great stuff there. Love all that. I am with you. I don't know what the line is right now. I don't know if you know, but I'm gonna take the Chiefs in a 3-point lead win. I'll say like 24-21. I think it's gonna be a little bit more low scoring. And look, I know I just laid out all the stats for why the 49ers are at such an advantage, and the 49ers end up winning on the back of that. I'll at least be happy with my process, and my thinking. But I'm just not gonna not take Patrick Mahomes in a Super Bowl. Like he's just reached that point of his career, I think, where this team has been a good defense all year, a very good defense all year. That's been understated, I think, by many. And they've narrowed the scope of their offense for the last few weeks to be an actually somewhat effective offense, right? And an offense that makes sense and an offense that you kind of know what you're going to get at least. So I think because of all that, there's enough for Patrick Mahomes. And it's not as bad of an offensive line situation as we were alluding to 2020 was, where every other day we were hearing that a starter was going to be out, right? That's not the case for the Chiefs right now. It's really just what's Joe Tooney going to do? And then how do those tackles play? So I'll say 24-21 Chiefs. I love the proposal. MVP will be Mahomes. I'm gonna say that we have Gatorade. I'm gonna say it's red because they're just gonna be prepared for either team with red, right? It seems like I'm sure that's like minus 50,000 out there, red. But you know, that's where we're going. Anything else here, Ronan, for you on the Super Bowl before it actually happens?
I cannot wait.
Very
It's
excited.
gonna
Love Super
the
Bowl.
halftime show not really being talked about much this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Our
Not being
boy.
talked about a whole lot this year. So
Listen, we
Usher.
dedicated a whole segment to it whenever it was announced. I forget when that was. And I found out that you are indeed old enough to know good Usher
Yeah.
times. So yeah, man, we're hyped. Love it. All right.
I think it's
Now,
time.
I think it's time.
After
Let's
the
get
Usher talk.
Yeah, when you get to Usher, you're pretty much ready for the next segment. So, the 2023-24 Statsheet Podcast Award Show, the finalists were announced this week for all the main awards. Ro and I are gonna just briefly react to who the finalists are, give a quick ranking 1 to 5 because the if you haven't heard by now, the NFL awards this year, these ballots, these finalists 1 through 5. They're actually going to get an official first, second, third, fourth, fifth place, similar to what the NBA and maybe some other leagues do. If you want to hear Ronan and I talk in depth about that, go to the Simon Short podcast feed where we go through all the awards, go player by player, give our picks. We build a ballot on there before these finalists were announced. So we only have a couple. We actually only ended up with a couple guys that were missing from these official ballots. So we're just going to quickly react to these before we get into our own awards. So Ronan, MVP. The five finalists are Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy. How'd you feel about that?
You know, I think that's probably the right five. Obviously, Mahomes might have. I mean, just for the sole fact that he's Mahomes, that team, you get like literal with the award, right? Most valuable player. It'd be Mahomes every year. But outside of that, I think it's the right five.
Yeah, it's fine. I had Mahomes over Purdy, but I had all these other four guys. But I would have had Mahomes in there. But my five in order, with the winner being first, is obviously Lamar Jackson. I'd put Christian McCaffrey second. I'd have Josh Allen third. I'd put Dak fourth and Brock fifth. And I'm a huge Dak believer, by the way. I'm in on Dak, but I think Lamar, McCaffrey, and Allen had superb seasons, especially the second half for Allen. So that's the five I would do. What order would you put those guys in?
I would go, you would know this. Christian McCaffrey, one. Lamar Jackson, two. Josh Allen, three. Dak Prescott, four. Brock Purdy, five.
For hearing more about Ronan talk about Christian McCaffrey and his MVP case, go check out the Simon Shore podcast. We're gonna quickly move on here. Offensive player of the year. The finalists are Tyreek Hill, Lamar Jackson, CeeDee Lamb, Christian McCaffrey, and Dak Prescott. Ronan, what was your reaction to seeing these five?
There isn't really a name that you can say, hey, what about this guy? Maybe like an AJ Brown, but they're towards the end of the season, things kind of fell off a little bit. Again, I think this is the right five. Lamar Jackson, an MVP and offensive player, I don't necessarily love that. I feel like if a quarterback is in one, maybe not get the other, right? I understand it right for McCaffrey just because he probably won't get MVP. So being in contention for both is nice. But I think again, the right five.
See, I almost think it would be really bad for the quarterback wins MVP every year, if especially now that these ballot includes five players. Like if Lamar Jackson isn't even the fifth best offensive player of the year, how could he be the MVP? So I think they kind of have to be it. It's how you end up with what was it, 2018 when Brady won MVP and Offensive Player of the Year, right? And I'm sure there have been many other examples, but I think that's right. Here's the name that definitely I'm shocked is not on this list. It's Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Okay, yeah.
He, McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, and Tyreek Hill were the only players that had 1,500 scrimmage yards and 10 touchdowns this year. So I had him on my own ballot over both quarterbacks for the thing you mentioned, right? Like Lamar doesn't need to be second in offensive player of the year. He just needs to be on the ballot. So I would have had Amon-Ra St. Brown in there. And then maybe that's just my anti-QB bias. I am glad Dak's getting the recognition, but he would have been the guy I had off of there. What do you think about Amon-Ra? And then go ahead and give me your 1 through 5.
I think Amon definitely has at least justification to be on there. Again, same with Dak. I just kind of glossed over him and went straight to Lamar there. Both of them could probably do without being on this list, especially being on the MVP list. So getting right like an Amonra and then someone else in there, I think would have been ideal. But I like the list. I'd go personally with this list right here, 1 through 5. Probably, are you going Lamar 1 because he's probably going to get MVP? Is that how we're doing this, or is this just like.
I do your own 1 through 5. So I
Okay.
assume if you have McCaffrey winning MVP, you'd put
Right.
Lamar number one for this, or would you go with one of the other guys?
Yeah, we'll go Lamar 1. We'll go McCaffrey 2. We'll go Lamb 3. We'll go Hill 4. And we'll go Prescott 5.
All right, we're pretty different. Yeah, so I went McCaffrey one, pretty easily. Tyreek Hill, I went ahead and gave two. CeeDee Lamb, I put at three. I could maybe flip those. And then Lamar and Dak, this might just be my anti-QB bias for the award, like you're saying. Like, why they don't need this one too, right? They already get the MVP. So I just put them at 4 and 5 just out of principle. Defense player of the year. Our finalists are Deron Bland, cornerback for the Cowboys, Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons, and TJ Watt. What did you think about this fivesome here?
I like it. I like it. I don't have the sack totals right in front of me, but I feel like there's always going to be that one guy who gets like second or third most sacks in the league and is just snubbed. Garrett, I think had a very good season, but kind of fell off there towards the end. I don't necessarily know if it was Defensive Player of the Year worthy, just as an overall frame of work. I love seeing Bland on the list, right, with all the pick sixes. I think that's definitely deserved. Parsons, another good season. I almost want to say quiet just because it wasn't, a historic season from him, and that's almost his expectations now, is to either, go out there and have a 20 sack season or to go out and do something crazy, right? Drop back into coverage, do a cartwheel, drop kick the quarterback, do something. But overall, I think the list is good. I'll go ahead and dive into my 1 through 5 if you
Go for
like.
it. Go for it.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just go TJ Watt number one, your guy. This is where it kind of gets dicey because you can go a number of different ways. All of them deserve credit, so not to discredit any of them to rank them, but go maybe I'm gonna go Max Crosby 2. We'll go Deron Bland 3, Parsons 4, Garrett 5.
Wow. Spicy. Interesting. I love it. I love it. Yeah, in terms of guys missing, Roquan Smith, I think, is the guy that should still be on
Yeah.
here. When you and I did the pod, we talked about how much can you value what Deron Bland did, right? And we both even said he wouldn't have made our personal ballots, but we wouldn't be upset with him just for honoring that place in history, right? Breaking the record for most pick sixes in a season like that needs to be honored. So I'm glad he is on here. I'm sad Roquan isn't on here. I'd rather have taken one of the edge rushers off just because it feels like they're kind of just stacked on top of each other, right? You mentioned like who are the other guys that like lead are in the tops in sacks, and there were four guys that were above Crosby, Garrett, and Parsons in sacks this year that are not on this ballot. That's Josh Allen with the Jags, Trey Hendrickson with the Bengals, Khalil Mack with the Chargers, and Danielle Hunter with the Vikings. All had si between 16 and a half and 17 and a half sacks, and then there's the drop off to Crosby at 14 and a half. So yeah, that was an interesting note by you. Glad we found that. But Roquan is the only guy, as far as being the best defensive player on what was the best defense this season. But people just don't like the off-ball linebacker position, unfortunately. My 1 through 5 would be Watt. I would still put Myles Garrett to first half of the season and being the best player on what was the second best defense all season. Max Crosby 3, I'd put Deron Bland 4, and then Micah Parsons 5. As you said, Parsons, a quiet 14 sack season for Parsons. It was a little bit of a weird year for them. Offensive rookie, let's jump into this one here. We have Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, Puka Nacua, Bijan Robinson, CJ Stroud. What do you think about this five?
I mean, rookies balled out this year, man. I'm sure there are a number of different guys you can add in. Bijan Robinson is kind of an interesting one just because he wasn't used to his full capacity, I don't think. But in short clips, he was electric. That first touchdown, with the aerial view that kept getting posted all over the place, that was fun, man. So all five are good selections. Not too mad about any of them.
Yeah, I had so those first four, the main four, right? Stroud, Gibbs, LaPorta, and Nacua were definitely on my ballot. I think they were on yours as well. I think that's the clear top four. My five spot was between Bijan Robinson, Rashee Rice, and Zay Flowers, and it was just kind of about what you valued. So I have no problems with Robinson being here. Robinson, I had this for the pod that we did. One of just four players to rush for 950 yards, receive for 450 yards, and have four receiving touchdowns as a rookie running back. So very good year. Not what we wanted, especially on the ground as an actual runner, but very, very good year for a rookie back as well. I'll give you my one through five here. I went with, oh gosh, hang on. Where'd my list go? I went with Stroud one, obviously, Puka two, Laporta three, Gibbs four, Bijan five. How would you have it?
I same list to the T. Obviously Stroud had an unbelievable season. Exceeded pretty much all expectations all in the course of a year, as did Puka Nacua as a fifth round rookie, coming in, and he was basically wide receiver one while Cooper Kupp was gone. Not even basically, he was. I mean, that's no overstep. And then he continued to be a wide receiver one and a half pretty much between he and Cooper. So unbelievable season between the two of them. Unbelievable season between the five of them. The two Lions rookies obviously balled out. I'm feeling pretty good about my draft reactions from that because I was loving it then. I'm loving it now. Laporta was a great pickup. Eyebrow razor, right, going over Mike Mayer. No longer. They got their guy, and man, Jahmyr Gibbs. Oh my God, is he an electric factory?
Yeah, he's
We need to see him touch the ball more because we got our dose of him at the back end of the season. But all five of them, great seasons.
Really fun year for the rookies. Really fun seeing those Lions rookies ball out. I will maintain my take until we get to like second contract time for those guys. We'll see what happens. But yeah, for the time being, I'm wrong for my draft reaction. There it is. Defensive rookie of the year. Your boy made it, man. The ballot is Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, Joey Porter Jr., Kobe Turner, and Devin Witherspoon. Give me your reaction, man. Your guy got on here. We weren't sure.
He did, rightfully so. Kobe Turner had an absolutely phenomenal season. Led all rookies in sacks from the interior. First time I believe an interior defensive lineman has had 8.5+ sacks since Aaron Donald. So it, that might just be a Ram thing, but I believe that might be season
Feels right.
or
Feels
league
right.
wide. But just an outstanding season from Turner. Might have reaped the benefits of playing across from Donald a little bit, right? But that's just part of the game. And I mean, he was bullying people all season long. He's nicknamed the conductor, which, you know me, I love my nicknames. So the fact that I don't have to come up with it, and he does his little conductor, whoop, 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 after his sack, is gold. It's cool to see, right, going into the season, this defense was very, very young. It's cool to see young guys emerge on a defense that had some question marks on it, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, shout out to the voters in the league for getting Kobe Turner on this ballot, because when we did our pod last week, he was nowhere to be found on the betting markets. He was like plus 20,000, right, to be even a finalist. So really glad he got on there. And this is the, I mean, there was a number of guys we could have named, but I don't think anybody on here doesn't deserve to be on here. The only argument I think you could make is Witherspoon, just because of the games, right, played. He missed more games, I think, than some other guys. But clearly you watch him and you're like, this is obviously one of the best five defensive rookies. So I love it here. My one through five, I did Will Anderson. I think he had the most impactful and best all-around season. At one, Kobe Turner at two, Jalen Carter, who kind of like Witherspoon watching, it's like his individual talent was great, but that Eagles defense fell off so hard at the end of the year. So I have him at three. And then I put Joey Porter Jr., my guy, shout out, at four, and then Witherspoon at five. And really the differentiating factor there was outside one-on-one corner, slot corner, and games played. So I had Anderson, Turner, Carter, Porter, and Witherspoon.
I like it. I like it. I have a little bit of a different one. Because
Oh, do
me,
you?
I'm going. I do. I do. I do. The bias in me has Turner one. Because he needs the recognition. He had more sacks than Carter and Anderson. Playing from the interior, right? He played a lot more snaps than Carter. So you know you can factor that in, right? Carter did it on less snaps, or did a lot on less snaps. But at the same time, Turner was out there a lot, as a big factor of that Rams front. So I'm gonna go him one, a little bit of bias here. I'm gonna go Anderson two, Carter three, Porter four, and Witherspoon five.
I like it. Comeback player of the year is DeMar Hamlin. I know there's a whole ballot and a whole thing, but it's DeMar Hamlin. I will not listen to any other arguments. So we're gonna move past that one. Coach of the year. Gosh, this one is so tough. There's a million names you could say every single year. But the finalists were Dan Campbell, John Harbaugh, DeMeco Ryans, Kyle Shanahan, Kevin Stefanski. Ron, do you feel like there was a big snub that you would have liked to have seen on here? And what's your one through five?
I don't think so, Simon. I think all five of these coaches have a right to this throne. This is a tough one. This is a very tough one. I'm gonna go Ryan's one. I'm gonna go Stefanski two. I'm gonna go Harbaugh three. I'm gonna go Campbell four, and I'm gonna go Shanahan five. That's a very tough one. I think Shanahan might be the best coach in the league. So, you know, this isn't a ranking of best coaches. This is just ranking them based off of the situation that they had going into this season, since training camp. You know, what did they do with the situation they had at hand? And man, DeMeco Ryans, oh my goodness.
I mean, what was it? First time a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback win a division, right? Something like that. I mean, he's got to win. That's so great. In terms of these five, yeah, these five are great. I think you also could have made a case for McVay, LaFleur, Tomlin, Steichen, for sure. But this five feels great, and I don't think you can quibble with any order that it goes in. But I did DeMeco. I did Shanahan at two. Campbell at three, Harbaugh at four, Stefanski at five. Assistant coach of the year. Well, what do you think about this five here? We have Ben Johnson, Mike McDonald, Todd Monken, Jim Schwartz, and Bobby Slowick. What do you think of that five, and what order would you put them in?
I like the five. I like the five. A lot of these guys were getting head coaching looks at the very least. Ben Johnson, I think, takes the cake here just because of what he did with that Lions offense. I think Jim Schwartz might go second here with that Cleveland defense was absolutely insanity. Go Bobby Slowick three. Oh, I don't know. McDonald three, Slowick four, Monken five. I think is what we're gonna roll with.
I have Jim Schwartz winning because he took a legitimately bad Browns defense last year, added a nose tackle, and made it an elite defense. Like that was all. Like that was their major move. Dalvin Tomlinson comes in. They did a couple things, at edge. Za'Darius Smith and Ogbo from the bring him from the Texans last year, but no major moves. Right, Myles Garrett and those DBs is the core of that defense. And he took what was a bad defense last year and made them elite. So I have him at one. McDonald and Johnson, I put at two and four respectively because they kind of just built on what they did last year. But McDonald turned what ended up being a good Ravens defense that I think took a step back in talent on paper at the beginning of the year and made them elite. Todd Monken, I put at three because he took a good offense, changed the offense, but with good players and made it very good. And I have Ben Johnson at four, Bobby Slowick at five. All right. Those were our reactions to the ballots. But it's time to get to the real awards here. Ronan and I both have a number of awards. We'll see how many we actually get to here. But Ronan, what's Ronan's first award for the 2023-24 season?
You know, Simon, it's a pretty simple award. It's for a guy that we just talked about a little bit ago. But it's the Diamond in the Rough award, and it goes to Puka Nacua because, man,
You just had to
how
get
do you
Puka an award in this
find?
episode.
I do because we need to elaborate a little bit. We need to, maybe further our minds into the Nacua universe. How do you get a fifth round rookie right to be in the Pro Bowl, right, 9 months later? How do you get here, Simon?
She's a good player. Good player.
Yeah.
You find a guy who went to BYU and was kind of, or Utah, no, BYU, it was kind of slow, and you're like, he's good at football. Let's draft him anyways. And then you throw him the ball. It also helps to have an elite offensive mind, an elite arm talent in Matt Stafford. And then Cooper's hurt for a while, so you gotta pad the numbers a bit. But Puka's really good. I love Puka. I'm very excited about this, and I'm excited for you, and I'm excited for him to win the Diamond in the Rough award. My first award, let me start with a classic here. Last year on this podcast, Ron and I would hand out many awards all throughout the weeks, and one of our recurring favorites was the Ronan Was Wrong award, named for
Oh
Ronan Summers.
no.
But it would go to
I
a
know who this
handful
is
of
going
different
to.
people. No, I don't think you do. This is going to
Ooh.
me. The
Oh.
Ronan Was Wrong award is going to Simon for my takes on the Cardinals preseason, for being totally wrong on the Cardinals. Their intentions for Kyler Murray all year, whether he was going to play, whether he was going to be there long term, how this team would play for Gannon, all of it, right? Because this team showed up and played for Gannon, played hard. The defense was still very bad, albeit there's not really a whole lot of talent on that end. So Gannon has to fix his defense. But I was completely wrong on what I expected from the Cardinals this season, other than, bad play. Because I mean, let's face it, they still don't win very many games. But knowing what this team was about, I was completely off on. So Simon gets the Ronan Was Wrong award. That's my first award.
Well, congratulations, Simon.
I appreciate it.
It's awesome to see you get an award with my namesake. With that being said, I guess in the spirit of things, I'll go ahead and give my Oopsie Daisy award, and that is going to be given to Sean Payton and the Broncos because Oopsie Daisy, we were wrong. We thought this was going to be a match made in heaven, something that, hey, this might be a sleeper Super Bowl team, right? Russell Wilson might be able to hit a gear again. Oopsie daisy.
Yeah, I just went on record. I never said that. That never
Not
once came out
all right, we as in me.
of my mouth. Let's talk about another AFC West team that had its own struggles this year. It's my Turnaround of the Year award, and it goes to the Las Vegas Raiders. I was perhaps the lowest on the McDaniels Raiders going all the way back to last year, but I did vow early on this year that I would turn into their biggest supporter once McDaniels was out the door, and here we are. In a year and a half with McDaniels, they were 9-16. Everyone was miserable. Nobody was happy. They sent off one of, let's face it, the franchise's like most iconic players of the last 20 years in just like super sad fashion. Davante Adams is like miserable on the sidelines. Just the vibes are all bad for Vegas. They fire McDaniels. They go 5-4 with Antonio Pierce. He's their new head coach. They went from a bottom 10 defense to a top 10 defense in the second half of the year. Best players believe in the team again. Everyone's smoking cigars and other things in the locker room. And they now look to be decent quarterback play away from an actual playoff contention. So the turnaround of the year goes to the Raiders this year, Ronan.
Absolutely, absolutely. It all started right with the departure of McDaniels and the arising of Pierce.
They'll probably send him the trophy. They'll say, "Hey, man, this is for you. Thanks for getting out."
You know what? I think that's exactly what should happen. I think that's exactly what should happen there. No, completely deserved. I guess I'll go ahead and hit you with my next one, the Hush Hush Award. And that is going to Jordan Love for silencing the
Oh
doubters and
yeah.
the haters.
Oh yeah.
4,765 yards, 35 touchdowns, 14 picks. You can sit there and criticize the Packers all you want for their decisions, but they're looking real smart right now, Simon.
I think this is going to be my favorite award that we do tonight. I love Jordan Love, man. My gosh, the stuff he was doing this year, it was just so fun to watch and watch him. And we can linger on this one a little bit if you want to watch him work through stuff throughout the year. It was one of those that you had to watch the games. And I'm not saying you had to be complete film nerd and break down the all 22 every week to see it, but just like if you watched on like a quarterly basis, right? You saw him at the beginning of the year have success. You saw him, partway through the year start to find some struggles. Two-thirds of the way through the year, it's like, oh, it's not looking that great. And then at the end of the year again, between the Chiefs win through the playoff appearance, you're like, oh man, this guy figured it out again. To see a guy hit essentially a rookie wall, have a bunch of mistakes, playing with other young offensive players, going through some hard times, but having good process through so much of that, the way he managed the pocket, the way he worked through progressions, the way he would kind of bounce back after mistakes. There's so much to like throughout the year. And now we're here at the end of the year and we're like, this guy, like going into next year, is an above average quarterback, certainly. And depending on what happens, the way some guys shake out throughout the rest of the offseason, is this a guy we're talking about as knocking on the door of top 10? I love this award. Let's see here. Let's be a little negative here. We've been positive. I've got a
Oh
negative one first.
no.
I think you're gonna like this because
I'll be
you were on my
negative
side of
if you
this
be
early on.
negative.
It's the F around and find out award, and
Okay.
it goes to Zach Taylor and the Bengals.
Oh.
This team tested fate
Oh.
when they pushed Burrow after the calf strain in training camp to be ready to start by week one, and they played him through those first 4 or 5 weeks when he was clearly bothered by it. The timing was off of everything. The team wasn't playing well, and they just kept pushing him through. I know he didn't go and tear that calf or injure it further or anything, but halfway through the year, he gets a crazy random wrist injury that knocked him out for the rest of the season. They tested the football gods, they tested fate, and they pushed their starting quarterback, who just got a huge bag, into a injury-riddled season. So the Bengals, and I'll give it to Zach Taylor specifically, effed around and found out this year, Ronan.
I love it. I love it. They did. Pretty deserved too. Not to Joe Burrow by any means.
Nope.
But the award most definitely. Mine is equally lighthearted and nice and sweet. It's the House of Cards Award, and it
Ooh.
goes to the Eagles because everything fell apart.
I have an Eagles win too.
Everything was going so well for the Eagles this year. They were looking like the powerhouse team. And then all of a sudden, everything just started crumpling down. Is Sirianni going to be the coach of this team? Does AJ Brown even want to be there? I mean, we asked a lot of different questions at the end of the season about the Eagles. None of them were good, Simon.
They were not. And you know what? I think this is a great award, and they're gonna have to come right back up to the stage, Ronan, because I have an award for the Eagles as well. And it'll give them a positive outlook. It's the Breakfast Ball Award. Listen, Super Bowl hangover. It happens to just about everybody. Rough year for the Eagles. Between being a year removed from the Super Bowl going into next year and very crucial and very positive coordinator changes, right? You bring in Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore. I think they'll be right back to it next year, right? So don't hop all the way off the bandwagon yet, everybody. Eagles fans, the Eagles fans always hate their team, but Eagles supporters, let's say, Eagles players, it's gonna be fine. You're gonna be right back to it next year. Super Bowl hangover. You got new coordinators in. All the vibes are gonna be good. Breakfast ball, goes to the Eagles as well.
I love it. I love it. I've got one more, and
Perfect.
honestly, it's just to kind of note one more time on a guy that we honestly talk about on this podcast every so often. It's honestly just Ronan's Flowers, award. That's just kind of what
I
I
like it.
decided to go with there, and it's to Quincy Williams. 139 tackles, 95 solo. He had two forced fumbles, four QB hits. He just got a bag, I think, midway through the season this year. And he's from my university, Murray State University. He's brother of Quinnen Williams. I believe Quincy got hurt before, I think the story is his senior year of high school. And so Alabama, I think, maybe revoked their offer. And so he went to Murray State, had a successful career, and then went to the NFL, was a later round pick, I believe. I don't think he was very high up. The rest was kind of history. He was drafted to, I believe, Jacksonville.
Yep, in the
Yeah,
third round.
Jacksonville. And then, 2 years later, he was on the Jets roster. And for the past 3 years, he started more than 10 games
He got
each.
that all pro this year, right? Yeah,
He
this year.
did. Yeah, all
First team
pro
all
this
pro.
year.
Yeah, man. Stud. That dude, off ball linebacker, man. I mean, this guy is just
Yeah.
was out there on the street, and Jags got him for or Jets got him for nothing from the Jags when they signed him originally. And yeah, he got paid. Love to see that. I'm gonna stick with the team in New York. And it is sad, but it's also maybe also a little positive looking. But it's the Who Walked Under a Ladder Award, and it goes to the New York Giants. Because this team, this was just not your year, buddy. This was just not happening this year. You talk about 11 different offensive linemen started a game this year, the quarterback injuries, you've got a Tommy DeVito situation, you've got his agent making the Italian Sports Hall of Fame and then being revoked, I think, once he got fired from working for DeVito. You've got your head coach and your new DC butting heads all throughout the year and ending in a parting of ways, a 40-0 season opening loss. This team just obviously never had a shot, and that's coming off of Daboll winning coach of the year and Daniel Jones getting a big contract. So it's not what you want, but clearly someone. I don't know if Daniel Jones like made a deal with the devil to get that contract and said, yeah, you can tank our 2023 season. I don't care. Just kidding. We don't need to get into all that. But yeah, man, who walked under the ladder? Giants. It'll probably turn back around to something similar to 2022. But yeah, they never had a shot this year, Ronan.
It's a very valid question, and seeing the range of Daboll go from playoffs in his first year to an absolutely abysmal season. We were feeling really good about Daboll after that first year, and now, he's kind of an afterthought, not really a guy we think about a whole lot in terms of, hot head coaches in the league. So, I mean, something's gonna have to turn around quick here, Simon.
Absolutely. Ronan, that is everything we have in our notes, man. Anything else that you want to get on air or talk about here before Super Bowl? Post Pro Bowl, coaching cycle over, award season is here, and anything else you want to get off your chest before we get out of here?
I don't think so, Simon. I think I've dug myself quite enough of a big hole after, guessing the final score of the Super Bowl. So, just gonna no more predictions till next week, whenever I can make next season predictions and everybody will forget about them.
I love it. Great call by you. All right, everybody, that is it for us. Thank you for listening to the Stat Sheet podcast. Make sure you check out the other pods on Box Score Network. Make sure you are following Stat Sheet Pod on Twitter at Stat Sheet Pod. Make sure you are following Box Score at B Score Network. We thank you so much. Enjoy Super Bowl week. Programming note, we will have next week's episode, our only Sunday night episode of the year. Because, hey, man, it's all about the Super Bowl. So we'll be back with you Sunday night in your feeds Monday morning to react to the Super Bowl. So make sure you are subscribed and have a good week of Super Bowl prep. Get all your bets in and enjoy, man. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you next week.